This podcast is brought to you by Learn Prime. Start your journey to becoming a great developer at learn.thoughtbot.com.
It's our tagline. Build phase. No nonsense.
Hey everybody, this is Mark in San Francisco.
And this is Gordon in Boston.
And this is Build Phase. So this is our last episode for the year. This is airing on Christmas Day. Merry Christmas, everyone, right?
Yes. Also Merry Christmas.
On the 25th? Yeah, say
and,
it, Gordon.
And Festivus or whatever. I don't know.
Don't be such a Scrooge about it. And then we'll be taking 2 weeks off, and a new episode of Build Phase will be in your podcatchers. January 15th.
Was it the creepy laugh at the podcast?
It wasn't meant to be creepy. It was just that word is dumb. Podcatcher. Like, I propose that, like, we refer to ourselves as pod throwers. Because then the listeners, the handsome listeners,
professional pod thrower,
they receive the thrown pod in their podcatcher. Hold on. I have a black and white picture of an old timey kid and a chicken sitting in a chair smoking a cigarette. Perfect for this.
What are you working on this week or like these 2 days?
I'm actually not.
Are you doing client work?
Yeah. Because I'm going on vacation.
Are you actually gonna go?
It's looking that way.
Sweet.
Got my cue down. I have like two or three stories which I'll get done today, and then I'm gonna interview a guy for them, and then I will be done.
Nice. That feels good.
Yeah. All Trails was my level up.
That's exciting.
What are you doing?
I'm learning me some Haskell.
Ah, got it.
I somehow ended up in the nerdiest project probably we're doing. It's cool though. We're trying to learn functional programming. So it's not even specifically about Haskell. Like the idea was write a simple application in Haskell. So we're doing like ZSH history analysis. So a really simple thing that takes your ZSH history, reads through it, and then tells you like what commands you use most. And it's like weighted by the length of the command. So, you know, if you run longer commands more often, then they bubble up to the top.
Got it.
And it's there to show you basically things that you could alias better. So like for the Ruby people specifically, like if you're running rake a lot, maybe you want to alias that to R because that just saves you 3 keystrokes. But when you've run it, you know, 700 times or something like that, keystrokes add up.
Yeah. It just becomes, well, like 4 keystrokes, it just becomes like 1, right? Like,
right.
Your fingers are just like slamming down on keys within milliseconds of one another in the right order. And
yeah. And so like one of the things is we started doing it. And then after we kind of implemented it in Haskell, we were like, this is incredibly useful because you end up doing a lot of tab completion. You know what I mean? So like Ben Orenstein had like these Git scripts, like Git dash commits dash by dash something date, whatever. I don't know. It, like he had some like custom Git scripts that were in his path that he ran that way all the time. But he, you know, it's not like he typed all that out. He typed git dash and then tab, you know what I mean? Just like tabs through the rest. So, but it's still, you know, it's fun. So like we wrote it in Haskell. And then, Ben knows some Clojure. So we wrote it in Clojure. And then, Pat Brisbane did it in Haskell. Like he refactored the whole thing, made it much smaller, much harder to read if you don't know Haskell, but according to the people that do know Haskell, much easier to read if you do. So like I looked at it and I was like, cool, now I have no idea what that is. But they were like, no, this makes way more sense now.
I'm sure they're just not trying to keep us object-oriented folk out.
Right. I don't know, man. But so then we refactored in Haskell, we refactored the Haskell version, and then before I came down here, we were refactoring the Clojure version. Clojure's screwed, man. Have you ever seen Clojure?
No.
Parentheses everywhere. Like I like people complain about square brackets in Objective-C.
Which you don't even need in most.
Right. But this was like everything is it's a Lisp, right? So I don't know very, very little about Lisps, but the, you know, programming thing, not the speech impediment. I have to clarify. I know a good bit about Lisps, the speech impediment.
Do you?
Well, I know that it's when you go th instead of s.
That is a good amount.
It's pretty close to as much knowledge. I think that's a functional knowledge of Lisps. Okay. But like to multiply. So like the first thing, you know, is like opening the REPL. So so I opened a closure REPL. So if I open a closure REPL and I want to do like, I want to multiply 2 times 3. Right. So I do 2 **3. And that results in 2 *$_**@(166F5AE2)3.
What?
Right. So the way you have to do it, I think, let me make sure. Hold on before I make an ass on myself.
Was it just taking every character and like evaluating it somehow? And that's what the asterisk ended up being?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't know how to do actually. I'm learning right now. I thought I knew. I thought I understood it enough to know how to do simple addition, but I don't. So here we are. I don't understand closure at all.
How long did it take you yesterday to kind of get like up on your feet with functional programming?
I'm still not. I mean, I sat around basically all day yesterday and watched Pat and Joe Ferris write Haskell. And I'm just like, okay. Like the big thing for me was like, there's so little syntax that it has a tendency to like kind of obfuscate what's happening, or it makes it harder to understand. Right. Like it, like little things, right? Like you don't use parens to hold the arguments for a function in Haskell. So if it's like a C function, you would have a function named foo. So it'd be foo paren argument or paren, you know, argument comma argument comma argument. In Haskell, it's just foo space argument space argument space argument. And the way you do, they use parens the way you use them like in math for like setting precedence. So the parens would go around foo. So if you want to run the result of foo 3, if you want to pass that into bar, you could do bar space paren foo space 3 paren, right? And that'll,
right. Okay. Yeah.
You can replace parens with dollar signs. So you can run that same thing by doing bar space dollar sign space foo space 3. I think this is we're quickly reaching like the limit of my knowledge about Haskell, other than they have sweet names for things like monad and thunk. Thunk is a thing. Such thunk? A great word. Thunk. I'm not entirely sure what it is, but it's totally a thing. And that's such a sweet word.
Apparently they can leak too.
Yep. It's a memory. It's a memory management thing. It's like a chunk of code that's evaluated and held in memory. I think I could be totally wrong about this. Yeah. So what I know about Haskell after a day is that it's really hard to read right now, and they're really good at naming things.
Solid language.
Yep. Well, their API documentation search engine is Hoogle. That's so good. And like they have like an RSpec clone, and they have a test unit clone, right? Or not clone, but they have RSpec and test unit, which are from Ruby, right? And they just call it HSpec and HUnit. It's so good. Like if you want to know if there's something in Ruby and you want to know what the same thing is in Haskell, just try putting an H in front of it. It's probably that.
Is there like a hake command?
I don't know. That's a good question. Their package managing system is called Cabal, which is
Oh man, I was really hoping for Hoobie Gems.
That would have been good too.
See, the system doesn't always work.
Right. But yeah, I started reading that the Haskell book this morning too, because I think it's interesting. I think that the functional programming stuff has interesting concepts to it that I think would be fun to bring back to iOS. I like the immutability stuff that they do and the value in, value out concept, right? So like functions in Haskell or in purely functional language like Haskell, functions don't have side effects or shouldn't have side effects. And so, and everything is a value in, value out thing. So I pass a value into a function and I get a value out of the function. That makes it super easy to test, right? Because I can just say, I want to test my sum function, you know, and I test it by passing in 2 and 3 and asserting that I get 5 back. Like, it's that simple. And everything is kind of like that, right? I send an object in, or not an object. I send a value in, I get a value out, which is nice. I started saying something right before I got onto that value. Oh, and the immutability thing. Like, they will fake mutability sometimes by doing a, like, I pass a thing in and I get a similar thing back, but it's just a new instance of that thing, right? So they're not mutating the thing that I passed in. So maybe I pass in a struct, like a struct that has a count in it. Like in this case, in this ZSH thing, it was like we had a type that was essentially a struct, and it had a command and a count, I think. And so then we passed that into a function that would increment the count, but all it did is created a new struct with that, pulling that command out and the count plus 1.
Okay, that makes sense. So this sounds ideal for like concurrent programming.
Yeah.
I know nothing about functional programming, but I want to know because I want to try Reactive Cocoa.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm hoping that kind of like wrapping my head around functional programming better will help me understand why Reactive Cocoa is appealing, because I still just kind of don't get it.
I think I need to see how it's used in a real app and not a trivial example.
Reactive Cocoa, you mean?
Yeah. Like, do they use it on GitHub for Mac? Do you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's where it was extracted from. So I'm pretty sure that it's using Reactive Cocoa. I know that Brightcove, their SDK is all built on Reactive Cocoa. Yeah, I want to – I'm trying to learn this more. I'm going on vacation next Thursday, so I'm hoping to read the Haskell book over the course of that time and try to learn Haskell better and learn functional programming a little bit better.
What are you going to make with it? You have an idea?
I don't know. I actually had a thought of trying to redo parts of Liftoff in Haskell just as like no reason, right? There's no real reason to move that away from Ruby, but you know, rewriting parts of it in Haskell could be a fun experiment.
Yeah.
Plus, there was this, I think one of our coworkers, maybe it was George, wrote this thing about, he posted on Twitter. It was like, unless your command line app is supposed to be used primarily by Ruby developers, there's really no reason to distribute it over Ruby gems. And I was kind of like, that's a good point. Like, why do we do that? Like, I don't know.
I think in this case, it was just accessible. It was easy. Or when I started it, I was just surrounded by Ruby developers. So why wouldn't I choose Ruby?
Right. Me too. But it's almost like does CocoaPods really need to be a gem, or could it be, it could be a, you know, it seems, I know it's written in Ruby, but it seems like it could be something like that you install with Homebrew. You know what I mean? And it's like right now I essentially have two package managers on my system. I have Homebrew and then I have Ruby gems, and that's, you know what I mean? Like there's stuff that I have to install with Ruby gems and there's stuff that I have to install with Homebrew. And I don't do that much like all this, the Ruby gems that I try to keep installed are their command line utilities. You know what I mean? Like I have a wrapper for like a thing for doing better Git pulls, Liftoff CocoaPods, the Nomad CLI stuff from Matt Thompson, Gist, which I don't think I even use. Oh yeah, I do, for creating Gist from the command line. And then Git-Smart, which is abandoned and I should probably wean myself off of it, but it does like super nice pulls.
Are those just aliases?
What?
Get Smart.
No. So it adds a new smart. It adds a few commands: smart dash poll, smart dash log, smart dash something else. I don't use any of them. I only use the smart poll, and smart poll, it does a few things that I really like, where if you have uncommitted changes, it stashes those automatically and then pops that stash after it's done the poll. It also, it's smarter about doing which poll method to use based on the kind of changes that it sees on the server, like whether to do a poll rebase or a poll, I don't know what the other ones are. Like, I don't ever use those options anymore because I just do, I have it alias to GUP. And then it also displays probably my favorite feature is when I do a poll, it prints the log of everything that's changed. So the commit log between the commit that I had and the new commit.
That's nice.
It's,
I like that.
It's really nice. That's probably my favorite thing, right? The other stuff is kind of nice, and I see it every now and then, but it's really nice to be able to be like, G up, and then here's everything that's changed, and I can just peruse that Git log and just be like, okay, like maybe something changed that shouldn't have, or maybe someone snuck a commit in, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, crap, that changes stuff that I was trying to do over here in this other branch or something like that, you know? So it's nice to have that kind of feedback. But yeah, like those don't need to be Ruby gems. You know what I mean? Those should probably be installed in another way. Maybe doing that Git thing would be fun to do. Maybe I should do that in Haskell. Like re-implementing the Git smart poll stuff that I was just talking about. Re-implement that in Haskell.
I think that sounds more compelling than rewriting liftoff.
Right.
Have you used Deploymate?
Yeah, I have. I used it when I actually haven't used it since we got a license to it. They frustrated me with their demo strategy. Do you know their demo strategy? So like if you haven't bought a license for it, it gives you, do you want to explain what Deploymate is before we go into this?
Yeah. Deploymate looks over your code and basically tells you, you know, this app may be built for 7.0 or 6.1, we'll say, and you're using this 7.0 only API. And it gives you warnings just like in Xcode, like warning you about incompatible API use. Yeah, it saved me quite a bit.
Super useful. I recommended it to my last client because they were doing that SDK stuff, and the SDK had to support two different versions. But since it's all distributed through CocoaPods, there wasn't any way to, like, you know, it's not like there was a static library there that they were constantly compiling and releasing that would give them warnings when stuff was deprecated or they were using stuff that wouldn't run on older stuff, whatever. So we were losing one level of safety there. And I even made the mistake, right, where we were supposed to support back to iOS 5 on the kind of business logic SDK, just because that's where we started it. And I used NS map table at one point and didn't even think about it. Just wrote the thing, sent it up, you know, went on with my life. And then like 2 weeks later, I was like, oh, crap. I used NS map table like a week and a half ago. We should probably either change that or bump the version, supported version. But so I actually recommended it to them to bring into their kind of like release process or their review process to make sure that they didn't run into those issues going forward. But when they first came out, I looked at them and their demo thing drove me crazy because the way their demo works, like if you don't have a license, you can run it on your project and then it will show you a random number of errors between 0 and 6. So sometimes it'll just say like, nope, you're good. And then other times it'll say, here's this one problem. And then other times it'll say, here's these two other problems. And it's like, that's not a demo of your product. That's, like, if I'm going to demo your product, I want to see, like, I'm trying to evaluate if this is going to help me. And if you're just changing the output, like, that doesn't, how am I supposed to know, you know?
Yeah, that's a crappy
it's so
scheme.
Bad.
I like the way Chocolat does it, where after 15 days or whatever, they force your font to Comic Sans.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
That's awesome.
It's brilliant because, you know, you've used the product and they're not taking the product away from you. They're just going to make it kind of awful to deal with. You know what I mean? I think Marco Arment in Build and Analyze there was one episode on pricing like early on. And one of the things he was talking about was like introducing pain points for customers to get them to upgrade, right? Like you have to find the right, if you have, for example, at the time he was talking about why he killed Instapaper Free, and just had Instapaper Pro, which is now just Instapaper. And he just couldn't find the pain point, right? Like he couldn't find a reasonable pain point to introduce in the free version that would compel people to upgrade to the pro version. But that in Chocolat is like a perfect pain point because you use it for the 15 days, and if you like it, 15 days is more than enough time to kind of be like, yeah, no, this is my editor now. This is what I'm going to use. And so on day 16, when you open it up and all your code's in Comic Sans, you click that button that says, yep, like, you know, purchase or whatever.
Like if I've gotten used to something and it switched to Comic Sans, I'll pay $50. Oh, Deploymate. It saved me after 7 came out. I kept getting bit by a tint color. Like I would set a tint color thinking, oh yeah, this will be fine. It'll just be ignored on 6. But no, it's just certain UIView subclasses had tint color before 7. And now it's actually on UIView. And then like the old, like, so for like bars, like search bar, it used to be tint color, but now what that used to do is now bar tint color. It's screwing me up there for a bit. Deploymate saved me.
That was probably my favorite UI bug, like coming into the iOS 7 beta, like opening up, for example, Foursquare. And Foursquare has I think they changed their UI, but they at the time they had a search bar in the nav bar, and the search bar was tinted to match the nav bar color with tint color. And then iOS 7 came out, and so all of a sudden you just had this different color blue nav search bar stuck up in the – it just looked freaking awful. Like
we had the same problem,
yeah,
on this app. The other good one was so the default tint color was causing all of our text field carrots to blend in to the text field because the tint color was white. And I'm like looking at this thing and I'm like, I have no idea where these carrots went. Like iOS 7 did something to these text fields, and then it finally just dawned on me one day. Like I think I woke up and was like, oh yeah, tint color. That always seems to happen. I figure things out in sleep.
That is kind of nice that – so you could set tint color then on the text field itself and just change the caret colors, right? Because that trickles down. Or is it a class thing?
No, you could set it right on the text field. And I think you can use the appearance proxy on it too. So if you wanted to do all text fields, you could just do text field appearance, set tint color.
That's a nice way of like hiding the caret, right? So like I had some text fields that they were controlled by like a picker view or something, like in that form stuff that we were talking about, right? I had a text field that it was getting its data from a picker, basically. Like I wanted to select a date in a date picker and then have the text version of the date show up in the text field. But so like having a cursor there or having the caret didn't make any sense at all to have that caret there. So, you know, I had to override draw. I think it's like draw caret at rect or something like that.
The way I've done that before is I've just used labels for things like that.
Yeah. There was more behavior in it that I didn't want to have to duplicate, like an active state. So like it changed some colors and it had a custom background thing. So like it didn't have a background, but it drew an underline under the text field, so it looked like you were like writing it out on a line, and so that line had to change. There's like a bunch of behavior that this text field had based on whether it was an active or inactive state. And I didn't want to duplicate all that with a label and then have to also deal with tap gesture recognizers on the label. Plus, there were enough things that would have to be duplicated or would have been a pain in the neck to do. So this made more sense. Do you use XC Tool at all?
Not directly. It's set up on Jenkins, but I haven't touched it in months.
Is there a reason you haven't switched to using the new Xcode build with the
one? I didn't know that there was like a new Xcode build, and
well, I mean, with Xcode 5, Xcode build was updated with Xcode 5.
Oh, I didn't realize that. So one, no, because I don't know. And two, because I'm afraid to ever change anything on Jenkins because he's so fickle.
That's fair. So with Xcode 5, so the reason XC Tool existed, the reason Fred Potter wrote it was mainly, from my understanding, was mainly because there was no way to run tests from Xcode build before. You'd have to create like a custom scheme that ran the tests or whatever. Like, it didn't have any integration with the test functionality of Xcode. You couldn't get to that from Xcode build. And so that's why XC Tool takes, you can say test, and it will just run the tests for that scheme, as opposed to having to create a custom scheme that just builds and run the tests and does, like, you know, whatever. But the new Xcode build does know about tests. So the syntax is actually incredibly similar, where you just say Xcode build, and then you pass in the scheme and the target, I think, and then you just say test, and it will run your tests.
Oh, nice. How's the output?
Gross. But that's why Marin, he's the lead maintainer of Kiwi now, and he's on the CocoaPods team. He wrote a thing called XC Pretty, which is awesome. And like, the Unix geek in me loves it, because all it does is you run Xcode build and you pipe the output from Xcode build into XC Pretty. And then XC Pretty formats the output in a nice way, and like adds color and like white space, so it's not just like a big block of text, and formats, you know, does the right thing for, like, if you run your test from the command line, it'll, you know, give you the right output and tell you. It's essentially just a output formatter for Xcode build's format. So that's nice, because XC Tool is, as far as I know, XC Tool is essentially re-implementing huge chunks of Xcode build. Because it's not using Xcode build, it's just building it, right? So this way, you could go back to using Xcode build, so you're not relying on a third party system. You're relying on the stuff that Apple is supporting. And then if you want the better output, you just pipe it over to XC Pretty.
That's awesome. I like the RSpec style one.
Oh yeah, because you can create different formatters for it, right?
Yeah.
So it comes with a few formatters, but
yeah, default and RSpec style, where it's just the, you know, awesome dots ticking by.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one of the nice things about like a tool like RSpec, is that you can actually create custom formatters too. So like, you can have your output do kind of whatever you want with RSpec. So you can build a formatter that does whatever. It could post to a freaking an API endpoint, or do whatever. It's just kind of a Ruby file that can do whatever you want it to do. And so XC Pretty kind of opens that up to us as well. I actually don't run tests in the command line very often, like ever, actually. So I'm not sure how often I will use it, but I think it's a nice progression. And I'm happy. I mean, I can't thank Fred Potter enough for kind of like opening that door and creating XC Tool. Because when it came out, it was like, oh, dang, that's exactly the kind of thing we needed. And it sucks that it was kind of obsoleted so fast by, you know, or Sherlocked a little bit, like a few weeks after. But, you know, I'm sure that plenty of people still use it.
I'm so compelled by the idea of using this formatter to like send the output somewhere for like further evaluation. Like, if I could have it hooked up to a Mac and then use the speech synthesizer to announce who broke the build when the tests fail on CI, that would make me so happy. Just public shaming.
Yeah, right. That's what technology's for.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. This is going to be my focus for the next couple months, every Friday. Public shaming utility.
Shame formatter.
Is it dumb to say that Xcode 5 is one of my favorite tools of 2013? Because it's obsoleted a bunch of crap. Like that KS image named. Or no, not exactly.
Yeah, I haven't used that in a while, KS image named. It wasn't working for me because we were using constants for our image names. So we were defining all of the constants in a file and then using the constants instead of strings for the image name. And it was breaking that completion. And it was actually breaking that completion on the entire line, where I'd type in the constant and I'd have to do it by hand. And then even if I hit tab anywhere after that, KS image named was still trying to complete the image names. But I don't even know that it works with the assets.
I'm not sure. I'm actually Googling right now because I was trying to figure out if assets library does something like that for you. Like if I have a group of assets in the assets library, does it dynamically create some name for it that's not a string? No?
A constant, you mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think so.
Okay. That's what I want.
I think you still refer to it as a name. Yeah, I would love to refer to it as a constant instead of a, like, something that's auto-completable. And
show the image, like, right there, like, in the autocomplete list. That would be great.
It'd be a fun holiday Xcode hack for one of our awesome listeners.
I thought you were going to say for me.
No.
I don't want to write any Xcode plugins. Like, development on Xcode is moving too quickly now. I don't think there's any point. Does Alcatraz work in Xcode 5? I haven't checked. I removed it a long time ago.
Yeah, I don't use it either, but yeah, it does.
Now, if we could just get a solid solution for Xcode bots and CocoaPods, I can get rid of Jenkins forever.
I actually think that one of the suggestions from, like, I've seen Aloy, the creator of CocoaPods, he's said a number of times recently, look, you guys don't have to be ignoring your pods directory in your repo. Like, there's no reason you can't include it, the pods directory. And I think that's his main solution, right? Like, if you check in your pods, then the bot doesn't have to run pod install, right? So,
but do you ever end up with merge conflicts with the pods then? I mean, if you're being smart about it, like...
I don't know. I've been ignoring the pods directory since day one because I was like, sweet, I don't need to include this in my repo.
Just a lot of bloat. It'd be better if Apple just gave us like a proper like pre and post hook for Xcode bots.
Yeah. I think, there's a hack you can do, I think, where you define a run script build phase. But then the problem there is that those are executed in a different... under a different user than your user. I don't know. I feel like I was reading something about that.
Yeah, there's a huge Google Groups thread, which we'll link to in the show notes, where they're discussing how this could maybe work. I'm not going to attempt it until there's like a real solution. And I don't want to check in my pods. I switched to iTerm this year. I've just been using Apple Terminal forever. The thing I like is that I have it docked to the left side of the window.
Oh, yeah, I do. And you have it bound to a hotkey?
Yeah, option space.
Yeah, I do the same thing, but with control backtick, and it slides in from the top. Like I'm in Quake. I like to pretend I'm in Quake all the time.
Awesome. I tried the top, and then I found that if I was trying to look at like a web page or something and see how something's done and then go back to the terminal, it's easier on the left and just throw the browser over on the right and get the full height of the screen.
Yeah, I don't know if it's since I moved to Mutt, but like I found myself moving away from using the kind of visor hotkey terminal and just always having like a terminal window open somewhere or just creating new windows and using tabs inside those windows. Like I have a tab now that has Vim for that Haskell stuff that I was working on, another tab next to that open to that directory already, a tab with Mutt open, another tab with Vim for notes for this, and then another tab, which I don't know why this is open. Oh, it's because I was looking at the closure REPL. I'll close that tab.
You'll closure it?
Yeah.
You're going to closure that tab?
Yeah.
BRB suicide.
Wow, so that's a thing now. You know what Tony's working on, right?
No. Just tell me.
Tony's working on, so for our listeners, it's the holiday party here at ThoughtBot, basically. So the past 2 days have been like a hackathon thing we've been doing. That's why I've been doing all this Haskell stuff. And Tony, the other iOS guy here in Boston, is he's an electrical engineer. And so he's like super into like Arduino and stuff. And so they're making an Arduino backed sensor to tell if the bathrooms are unoccupied.
Yes, this is a need.
It really is.
You've been
to our office. It's horrible. There's two bathrooms and they're around the corner. And we have a general rule of like leave the door open, you know, so that you come around the corner. And if the both doors are closed, then you know that both bathrooms are occupied. But you got to walk all the way around the corner. Like, and then you feel like an idiot. Like you walk up and you're like, oh, and then you kind of have to do the walk of shame back to your desk. And that sucks. So they're building up, they're hooking up these, magnet sensors plus an Arduino plus an API. I'm going to send you the link. I don't want to say it on air, but.
How many engineers does it take to use the bathroom effectively?
Yeah. There's actually a Heroku website set up. Yeah. And so display, I'm assuming that means that the bathrooms, there's at least one bathroom open. I'm going to leave it open and see if it auto refreshes. I don't even know if this is running anything.
See, now this is what investment time is for.
Totally.
This is solving a real problem.
Solving a problem. We were actually, one of the things we were going to do is write a command line interface to this in Haskell. That was our first idea for a Haskell project. It's like querying their API over Haskell. Once this thing is built, I think it's going to be, I give it a day and a half before someone asks me to write a menu bar app to like put a red or green circle in the menu bar based on whether or not the bathrooms are unoccupied.
This should just be indicators everywhere. Like that display behind Chad. Just like throw it up on just there. Like a
big dashboard. I wanted to have it tweet. Like have the application automatically tweet from an account. And I suggested the format of seating now available when there's a bathroom unoccupied. All right, back to actual stuff.
Real things.
Anyway, so iTerm 2, you liking it?
Yeah, it stays out of my way.
It's pretty similar to...
Yeah, but Terminal doesn't have these amazingly beautiful preferences icons.
It's true.
Thanks, Retta.
Is that why you changed? Because Retta did the icons for it?
I'd actually changed before that, but then once it got the new icons, because the old ones were really bad. I don't know. We said we were going to do this show about tools we like, and then I realized that I don't use a whole lot.
No, I don't either anymore. I mean, Dash. Let's see. What do I have open right now? Safari, Flint, Tweetbot, iTerm, Adium, Dash, Textual, which is like an IRC client because I was on the IRC earlier.
Getting some movies. Getting some wares.
No.
Oh.
No, I'm in the Vim room, the ZSH room, Git, Haskell, ThoughtBot, Objective-C.
Wait, there's a ThoughtBot IRC room?
Yeah, there's like three people in it. It's me, Melissa, George, Pat Brisbane, and two people I don't know. One might be Gabe. Nope, that's Garland William Binns III. It may still be Gabe.
Yeah, that sounds like Gabe. He's just switched around the last two initials to try to throw us off.
Right. You kind of never know.
No, you kind of always know. You could try baiting him with bad grammar if he corrects you. The show has gone off the rails.
Completely. Like, not even close. Show notes for this episode will be available at podcasts.thoughtbot.com/buildphase/21.
And as always, we want to hear from you. So email us at buildphase@thoughtbot.com or hit us up on Twitter or app.net at buildphase. Also, if you enjoyed the show, ratings and reviews are always welcome on iTunes.
This episode was recorded and produced by Mike Manner, edited by Igor Stolarski.